This is professional radio, gentlemen.
That would and be it's front wheel drive.
Scotty, have you got anyone you want to thank?
Just myself.
And now we do the after hours.
Gentlemen, what would you go for?
Thanks to your sin there.
Okay, and because it's not a supercar.
But it is.
It's not.
Automotive perfection comes in the form of two letters, A and U.
Long live my LTD.
Welcome to Car Talk. It's Tuesday night here at 98.9 Northwest FM. I'm joined in the studio with Mr. Alamdeep Singh.
What's up?
And online with Mr. Edward. I was going to say Edward Deep Bunting, but no, it's just Edward Sean Bunting. How are you guys? What's happening?
Hello, Matthew. Hello, Alam.
He gave away Poyed's full name. Now we just need his mother's maiden name, his, you know, date of birth, and, you know, we'll be doing all kinds of credit card fraud.
I reckon Ed would give his mother's maiden name before he'd give his date of birth. Would that be so correct?
I'm not too worried about my date of birth. I'm comfortable with my age.
So you should be. You're a handsome looking 28-year-old.
Ed, like when I met you, I forgot how old you are exactly, but I did not peg you as the age you were. I pegged you as maybe a few years older than us.
Yeah, correct. Same. Likewise.
Yeah, yeah.
And for individuals that just into their 30s, I think that's pretty solid.
That is pretty solid.
Yeah, yeah. When we start talking cars and I'm like, yeah, I drove one of those when they were new, and people kind of look and like, hang on, how fucking old are you? You know? Yeah. Or it's like, oh, yeah, I remember the launch of that. It's like, hang on, yeah, how? How do you remember the launch of that car? Yeah, quite old. I am quite old. It is true.
Well, look, you're not that old, Bunting. Let's be honest.
I'm okay with it.
Have you embraced it? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, no, it's funny. Not to hijack the entire podcast on my age, but we, when I turned 30, like 6 months before, that's when I had the sort of, oh God, what am I doing with my life crisis? And I've talked to quite a few people nudging 30 and they all say the similar thing. They're like, oh, 30, 30, 30. But then since then, you get over that speed hump of 30 and then you're like, ah, whatever. By 40, you're like, hey, this is me. I don't care. And then it's just every year plus then is, well, hey, I'm still here. So it's, you know, keep rolling. You know, you either have a birthday or you don't. And if you don't, you're dead. So it's like, well, you want that birthday. You know, you want to keep that ticking over. Like it's a bit of a badge of honor with a car. You know, you get to 100,000, 200,000, 300,000. It becomes a little game. Well, hang on, how long can we go here? Like, how long can I push this thing?
So let's just be honest. You are a very good-looking 21-year-old.
Thank you, Samuel.
85,000 Ks on you and a good service history. And dealership service history as well.
Yeah, full factory servicing. I often liken cars to the human body. Like I'll say to people, you know, what is the human body like? It likes good stuff going into it and that gives the best performance. Same with a car. You know, put the right fuel in it, put good fuel in it, you know, change the oil when you're meant to, like good. And I often liken the cooling system, the oil system to like, you know, dehydration or the water in our body and blood. Like the oil pump is like the heart, you know, and you've got good regular oil changes or whatever. And you know, you want a bit of exercise often, not just like dormant and then exercise, you know, then run a marathon. Cars are the same. They like regular exercise to keep everything, you know, working and what have you. It's very similar.
What's your favorite guy? You like your maintenance.
You got to maintain your diesel. Yeah. Shout out to Kent Bergsma of Mercedes Source in the US. Who is a character. And if anyone out there likes old Benzes, recommend getting onto that YouTube and watching Kent's videos. They're quite amusing and he's very passionate about them.
He's actually the best. I really like that guy. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say you were minged from the factory, from the dealership. So your body's in good nick. Yeah. Well, how else would you describe him in terms of a car?
I'm not a sports car. I never much cared for sports. You know,
I'd paint it as a semi-luxury sedan.
A W201.
I'm a bit daggy.
The W201's not a daggy car, but it's
That's actually quite a good topic. We should just freeze that and go next when we've got more people on next time. Let's do a topic that's what if you were a car, what would you be? It's like a Dodge. You do it with dogs. Like, oh, if you're a dog, you'd be a corgi or this. Do it, let's do it with cars.
And yeah, maybe we're going to have like an honest, what would you be?
We each come up with one for everyone in the group, and then the best vote gets it, sort of thing, you know?
I like that. I think we that's next week's quality listening on.
That is a good topic. If you're a car, what would you be in as a human? Yeah,
absolutely.
I like it.
Let's lock that in for next week. Bunting, anyway. Besides, you know, talking about you being minged and everything. How are you going? You're well this side of the world.
Yes, well, it's been quite busy on the car front. I have sold my little Toyota Echo that I had in stock. That was a lovely, easy sale to my friend's brother-in-law. He just happened to message me, my friend, and said, hey, what have you got? They just need a good, cheap car. He's written off his Mazda 3. And I said, well, I've got this Echo. He goes, yep, perfect. He drives 4Ks to work and back and just wanted a little cheap runner. And that is the perfect car for that. So
it didn't end up as an Uber Eats car, which is good.
No, it hasn't ended up as an Uber Eats car, which is good because it was a lovely little one owner, you know, very clean 124,000K Echo. So he picked that up last night. That is gone. I had word back that the Saab looks pretty good. So we think that'll be roadworthy without any repairs. So I'll know officially probably Thursday when the actual roadie guy looks at it. It's just my mechanic that's cast his eyes over that. The Honda Civic is still – I actually stole it back today because I needed something to drive to work. So I went down to the mechanic who hadn't touched it yet and said, hey, I'm taking that back for the day. Oh, I was going to start it today. I was like, bullshit. No, you weren't. So don't lie to me. Anyway, so I'll drop that back to him tomorrow morning and he can continue on with not doing anything on it. And that's about the sum of it car-wise. Oh, what did we do? Oh, I came with we had a little drive, which no doubt Matty will talk about. We went down to Geelong on the weekend and only five of us, I think. But because I didn't have anything in town really that was worthy of such a journey, I ended up bunking in with David in his son's Honda Accord Euro, which has some very good points and some not so good points. But that was a nice, pleasurable drive in the Euro. By and large, I can talk about that car. Actually, let's talk about that car for a minute. So 303,000K, Gen 1 Euro, 04, very early car, black on cream leather, luxury model. Positives of that car, mechanically, amazingly good. You know, like smooth, silky, transmission shifts like it should, you know, 303Ks and the thing feels new mechanically. It really doesn't sort of flare or jerk or run roughly, you know, it's running really nicely. So that's always impressive on those early Accord Euros. Everything seems to work, you know, windows, cruise, illuminated speedo needles, air cons cold, you know, like, okay. And I know he's replaced a compressor and done a few things to it over the years, but it's nice getting in a car of that age with that mileage and everything works, you know, it's not a basket case full of broken buttons. So that's good. Still looks pretty good. It's got some aftermarket mags on it, which are 18s, which are a little lower and, you know, meaner than they should be from the factory. So the ride is not as sublime as originally intended. But other than that, still a nice car.
They're a cracking car. I remember the one I had, and Alan, I think you went in that car as well, that Euro. It was a cracking car. It was comfortable, reliable. You know, that was a one owner car when I bought that, and I always wanted another one. I'm like, that's a cracking daily.
It was solid Japanese comfort.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. A friend of mine, or a family friend of mine, has got a black on charcoal standard model, not the luxury one, so no leather, no sunroof, etc. He's bought it new, full Honda book, and he's going to be selling that in the next month or so. And he wants to get somewhere around, you know, 5.5-ish, I think, for that, which would be a great car for someone. If you know anyone after one, 182 Ks on it. So not insane Ks. And he said, I didn't intend to keep it this long, but it just, he said, every time I drove it, it was just such a great car. And, you know, he said, I've kept it way, way longer than I ever thought I would because it was just so good. And what do you replace it with? He's a fan.
Is that a Manuel or is that a?
Oh, that's an auto. So it's an auto standard car, black on charcoal. Yeah, just standard one. But But that's an 07, so a little bit
later.
Yes, it's got the
available that, much in Manuel's apart from like the Euro R's or whatever?
Yeah.
No, they did quite a few. Another friend of mine, actually, that guy I just mentioned, Sun, he's got one too, and I helped him buy that years ago. It's a silver manual. And he's kept that way longer than he normally does too, because it was just such a good car, still is. Mm. I think that's only just clocked like 150K or something. It's pretty reasonable.
For me, that car was peak Honda. Like that was a real, it was
great car.
Yeah, great car.
And it shows in secondhand values of them. Like people are still asking for a real cracker sort of up towards 10.
Mm.
And they sort of hold around that 7, 8, 9, 10 for a really good one.
Absolutely.
You could do a lot worse than a Euro.
I was thinking for a future classic in terms of like a future club plate car in probably 5 years' time, that'd be something to look into, I reckon.
And 5 years, are they club plateable in 5 years?
Well, 2004, yeah, it will be.
Holy guacamole.
Yeah. So
that's nuts.
Yeah, crazy. So I think that'll be a cracker.
Yes. So I don't have any more real car news other than those tidbits.
Oh.
Got really nothing on the books. The SDI came to the Geelong drive day and, you know, it did the things and stuff. I think it's still at like 14,000 something Ks. You know, now it's become one of the
14 Ks.
Sorry?
14,000. Is that what you said?
Yeah. I'm not, just at 14,000. So,
what year is it? 2020?
It's a 2020, but yeah, model 21. So I think it's becoming one of the lower K examples now in the industry, which I'm not happy about because real sky should be using the car more. The MX-5 is still with my brother-in-law.
Still,
it is. Is that clocked over 2 weeks that his car was at the mechanics to get new suspension? And it's not like a car that's got complicated suspension or like airbags or anything. It's just a WRX. yeah, everything else is just pretty standard.
Well, I've got one more bit of car news.
Absolutely, Bunting, hit us.
Here's some advice for people. I have a Pajero, as you know. The tires on it are Kumos. They've started being noisy. So, yeah, they're not. There's plenty of chunks still left on them, but they're just, they're droning a bit. Mm-hmm. And apparently it's a bit of a thing. They get old and, that happens. So rather than buy new tires for $1,200 for a set, I found a set on Marketplace that are X. Someone's ripped them off a brand new Hilux. So Rangers, Hiluxes, things of that ilk that are quite popular, people will often pull off the standard all-terrain tires that are, pretty road-oriented and put on chunky muds or, Mickey Thompsons or whatever.
Yeah. So they'll keep driving on the road with those tires, making massive noise and getting poor fuel economy.
Exactly. But the original tires get pulled off and then they want to get rid of them and they want to get some money for them and they're way cheaper than if you... buy brand newies. So I found a set of those Yokohamas off a Hilux and I just thought I'd love to go nuts and put an off-road tire on that car, but I just don't do enough off-roading. It mainly spends its time on road or towing my caravan. So it's like, well, let's just be sensible, Ed. So before our drive on Sunday, I went out to country and picked those up. Looking forward to putting them on and hopefully having a quieter ride and a grippier ride.
So Car Talk top tip. Keep an eye out on your Gumtrees and Facebook marketplaces.
Mm-hmm.
Cheap tires from Rangers and Hiluxes for your car because people straight away sell them. And like these tires are brand new, so I've seen it done many times.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. And it's sort of unique to the four wheel drive world, really, because no one generally pulls brand new tires off a passenger car. It's far more likely to happen on an enthusiast sort of four wheel drive.
Unless your name is Rob Zadai, who drove his car home, his brand new Mustang home, changed the wheels the same day.
Well, that I can still get behind because people do buy brand new cars and then they also get a brand new set of wheels that are different. And you'll usually keep those old wheels and old tires at least together.
Yeah, correct. I'll keep it there. Yeah.
So. Yeah. So that I can understand the whole like ripping the tire off specifically just to put on, something else. It's something that's arguably worse for the car, unless the car's immediately going to the bush. Seems a little dumb, but. I don't think anyone's ever accused the four-wheel drive group of individuals to be smart. Come fight me.
Come fight me, people.
Shout out to Rob. He's on his bike trip around Vietnam currently. So shout out to you, man. We'll see when you get back.
Stay safe, Rob.
And Maddie, what about you? What's car news with you?
What's with me? I've just been driving the laser heaps, which has been great. I did take it in for a wheel alignment and the front... sway bar or anti-roll bar links are getting a bit, how are you going? So I'm going to just order a new set of those and whack them on. I could probably do them in the driveway, and they're not super duper hard to do. In terms of everything else, I've got to go get the MR2 service, but I was like, I may as well do that once I pull the motor out to reseal it all, because it's the rear main's leaking really badly. So I thought I'd just get it done in a little bit once I get the scan back, which is pretty much done now. I was just going to go pick it up, I think, essentially. So that's been a labor of love, but we're almost there with that car. And I think that's pretty much it on my end, gentlemen. Moving on, gentlemen. So anyway, tonight, I wanted to discuss a few things. Now, we're going to discuss, obviously, Classic Not Japan 2.0, which happened on Sunday. But after that, we're going to discuss about affinities. Now, affinities with cars that we've had. So we'll get to that in a little bit, but we'll talk about Classic Not Japan. So the day started meeting up at Pango in Newport for a beverage of a coffee around 10 o'clock. I rocked up. I brought the Typhoon, which is not Japanese, but anyway, that was another story. I just didn't get a chance to go home and get my car. Edward rocked up in the Pajero, but
with a boot full of tires.
Scotty rocked up in the Blade. Alan rocked up in the STI. David, obviously, and his son's Accord Euro. And my brother rocked up in a new car, which was surprising. But we'll cover that in a moment, because he's always buying something new. But the day went to so we had a coffee, then we caught up for a bit, had a good chat, then off we went. We drove down the Strand in Willy, and then went down to Geelong and looking at vintage like the Geelong Vintage Market there. And then went down to the waterfront for a lunch and a bev, and it was a lovely day. It was actually a good day to catch up with you guys and see all the cars out and have a day where we just it's like a car day, and that was really, really fun. Just wanted to get your highlights, gentlemen. Alan was out there with the camera shooting. He was doing quite well with his new toy. And
it's actually the first time I'd been to Geelong, not as a way to get to Lawn or something else.
You've never been to Geelong. Really?
Yeah, we never really went down that way. I think even as kids, a lot of times we'd probably go down the east side, like towards your Fern Tree Gullies and your Scoresby's and whatnot. They had that little market in Scoresby, didn't they?
I think so.
Yeah, something like that. Like I didn't never really recall going down the west end. So this was my first time.
First time in G-Town.
Yeah, and it was a place. It was fine. I definitely really did enjoy going to that secondhand shop. It was very large, and it didn't have the slimy feel of a Cash Converters or the shop next to Cash Converters in Glenroy, which I'm not hating on, but if you want to get like Cash Converters but slimier, that's the place you go. So this is very much a nice, like there's cool things there. There's no bartering, that sort of thing. This was just these are used items, pre-loved items. You find something you like, the price tag's on it, you pay it, that's it. Mm-hmm. And there's some cool things there. There's also like just VE or Omega lights, tail lights. But I guess it's a shop for everything, so you can't really hate it. There's a lot of cool cars and little car pieces and whatnot. Solid experience.
So first time in Geelong, and we went down to the waterfront obviously for lunch. How was the STI? Was it good to get it out for a change? Or
Again, because my brother-in-law has stolen my other car for a little while, I have been driving the STI a little bit more, and it's one of those things of like, because I don't drive it so often, it almost needs getting used to again.
Yeah.
As you get into it. And so like, having these last few days to do that, it was nice. I still maintain, I think having owned this car now for like 3-4 years, the WRX is actually probably a better car to own as a daily.
Okay. Over the STI.
Yeah. Just because the WRX, you can basically fang it and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And kind of, you can do that on the road more or less. Whereas the STI doesn't come into itself until you really do go for those like 10 tenths.
Yeah.
And when you're doing that and you're doing it on the road, you got to be careful.
You got to drive a bloody hard.
Yeah. You got to drive a bloody hard. And then it becomes very, very rewarding, but it's just how often are you going to get the chance to drive that hard? If you're being a sensible human being, of course.
But that's I think cars in the last 5 to 10 years, they're just so capable. It's just and all these journos, it's the steering's got a bit. It doesn't matter. They're just so capable.
The driver is the limit, I'd say 90% of the time.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. And so with something like with a little bit less power, but maybe you know, a little easier, something like the WRX is probably something that you can use in a daily capacity and it's still
more usable.
Yeah, more usable, definitely.
Edward, you went along in the, as you said, in the
Euro, yes.
But you also had a drive of the Blade.
I did. I snuck a little blip just towards the end in Scotty's new Blade, which of course for the listeners is a Toyota Corolla, basically with a nice specification level and a big fat Orion style V6 under the bonnet. Interesting car. It felt really good. Very easy to drive. You know, it's not a. I was saying to David and Scotty, I think, and all you guys on the day, it's. A lot of modern sports car or hot hatches are pissy little turbo engines, you know, and DSG boxes, and they go beep, 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 and you've got to ring their necks to, you know, they're working hard, in the other words. Whereas that lazy big 3.5 litre V6 in a Corolla sized car is not working hard. It's just easy, linear, smooth, luxurious power. Yeah, you can blip the flappy paddle things if you want to, but other than that, it's just a nice cruisy drive. The steering was really light, and the whole thing was just comfy, better seats than a standard Corolla. You know, it's got nice bolstering on the leather seats and heated seats. And so really it's we're talking about it and saying for the money they're worth, you know, this is sub 20 grand car, to have that sort of power and smoothness and a few nice options in a good size that's very usable, very parkable. I think it's a pretty good value.
Absolutely.
So I like the Blade. It's, as I said, it's not a sports car. You know, you're not zipping along going, "Whoa, this is so sporty." I more felt this is really nice and luxurious. Mm. It's a very comfortable cruiser.
Yeah. As I said, like you close your eyes and it feels like you're in an Orion in that car.
Yeah, you really do. But no one really needs the big fat bonnet and the big fat boot of an Orion or the width of it. So if it's just one or two people, it's basically an Orion shrunk in the wash. Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. There was also one more person in car there. It was Chad. Chad was there with his Silvia S13, which I had a drive of. That was fun. We swapped cars. He drove the Typhoon to lunch, from the what's it called? The vintage market. And as I'm driving out, this car got so much attention. There's kids at the exit. They was like, "Do a drift, do a burnout." And I was like, "Oh, geez, here we go." And then David's like, "There was a person taking photos or filming you as you were driving into town. People were just like, you know, seeing what is this? Like this guy with his stick it up, you know, pretty much race car." Which was kind of funny. But yeah, that was actually quite good to drive. That's the first time I've ever actually driven a S chassis car before. I've driven a few other Japanese, you know, sports cars, but never actually driven a Silvia. And it was cool. It was fun. It was interesting. I didn't really notice on the dashboard on those, but they got like these roll vents. So like right where your steering wheel is to keep your hands cool or warm, you can just roll them back, and then there's like there's vents there, and it's kind of got like little LED lights for your warning lights and stuff on the dashboard, which is super like really weird and 80s, and I kind of thought that was cool. It rode really well despite being on like completely slammed and on you know, sticky rubber and coilovers. It drove like 90% of the time when I'm not going over a speed hump. It drove really, 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 really well. So that was a really, really cool experience. I always wanted to thank Chad on the show. That's why I didn't mention you earlier. That was fun. So yeah, it was just a really eclectic mix of cars, to be fair. I remember when we were driving out of the car park, I'm like, "Oh, geez, there's an STI, there's a Silvia, there's a Cord Euro, there's a Blade." it was just weird, weird and wonderful cars. And that's what the car community is really all about, really. Like you're just embracing embracing the uniqueness of the difference in cars. So, overall good day. It was a fun experience. Going down to the waterfront, we had lunch there at the was it the yacht club? The yacht club.
Yes.
Yeah. The yacht club. Yes, we did. That was very nice, actually.
The only thing I reckon we could have used is more cars. Like that probably would just amped it up. I remember the Mount what is it? Is it Mount Arthur? No?
Arthur C.
That's the one. The I was thinking of Mount Martha for some reason. That's close. It's near enough. Yes. But Arthur's seat trip, we had, you know, two Civic Type Rs, two MX-5s. You with the MR2 for a bit. We had, you know, an F6 that was making 600 something kilowatts, which nearly ran out of fuel after filling up. You know, it was Scotty in the Liberty, I think.
Yeah, Liberty.
Yeah. So, and then there was David Day in the.
Yeah, they brought up the Cosmo, didn't you?
The Cosmo, yes, the Cosmo. So there was like a crazy variety of cars, which, you know, more cars are better in my opinion. Like, it's just, especially when you're making a little convoy, you know, some weird and wacky things. There's no gatekeeping about you can only bring this. We call it classic Notch Man for a reason.
Yeah.
And you bring anything and everything. And the more variety, the better.
Absolutely.
I agree.
My brother didn't come for the drive, but he rocked up with his son for the coffee in the morning. And I'm like, I'll bring the C63. He's like, yeah, I'll bring it. And then as soon as I see him turn around the corner, he's driving a brand new Ranger Raptor. And I'm just like, oh, geez, here we go. But he chose a good color, to be fair.
Blue, that car.
It is a nice blue. It's actually, it's a lot of car. Like, it's, you know, Fox Racing shocks that you can jump them and stuff. And he was telling me, like, I think at Cars and Coffee, that Ford brought out their Rally Ranger Raptor, like the one that they... used for the Baja 1000 or whatever it was, and basically it was all standard underpinnings, like standard suspension and everything. Well, the only thing they did was put a cage in it and strip it out, and it won its class, I believe, and did very well. So very capable truck, and that's a V6 twin turbo petrol. I can't believe how much. Is it 292 kilowatt or something? Like, they make a lot of power.
292 kilowatt.
That's like a lot of power. So
yeah, that's right. It's insane power, because I think he said that as I was standing there, and I was like, what?
Yeah.
Beautiful Alcantara sort of orange highlights on the seats, and it's nicely done. You know, I'm not a dual cab ute buyer, but it's, you know, for a sporty kind of tradey express, it's not cheap. I mean, it's 100k worth of ute, but it's nicely finished.
Yeah, it's better than I thought it would be. I saw one in person in that kind of blood red orange color that they come in, and I was like, "To Luke, why didn't you buy one of those?" And he's like, "Oh, no, I'd rather the blue to match my F6." So
blue is nice. It's a really nice color.
It is a nice color. I'm glad he got a color. I think that's because, like, too many people get like the charcoal or the grays or the whites.
White, black.
Yeah. So that was pretty cool, and got to still see him driving that. He reckons it's really quick, and he also said to me, "You don't have to run them in," because he asked Ford, and Ford was like, "No, these engines are pre-run in." So, which was surprising, which I was like,
"I mean, I've heard that from new car manufacturers before, but you know, that's some sales guy telling you that." I would still, you know, be relatively nice to it for the first few thousand.
Yeah, and look, he says, "I've given it a hit," and he's like, "It's quick," but he's like, "I'm not going to kill it."
So these. Petrol engines?
Petrol engine.
It's, I guess it's an odd choice for what is, I mean, based and originally sold as, you know, a commercial vehicle, you know, like utility car, but it's obviously not a utility car. It's one of them, you know, suburban trucks. At High Point, you know.
Yeah.
Somewhere on Chapel Street.
Everyone from the area.
Yeah. Just look, I mean, more power to the man. He's not hustling anyone or stealing anyone's money doing it, but it's like, you know, it does. It's been the situation for a lot of these cars. I mean, for the last, what, 10, 12 years at least. It started with the Territories, you know, and then everyone else just getting bigger and bigger cars without really necessarily needing them. At least with Luca, he can justify. He's like, I am a tradie, so, you know.
I do use the tray.
Yeah, sometimes. But, yeah, it's still, you know, you can't take away the fact that is a fun car.
Yeah,
I'm sure, you know, getting 292 kilowatts and 500 and something, I think close to 600 newton meters of torque, it's gonna let you have some fun. And considering that people are buying the, you know, the Rams and everything else with the V8s, like, this is certainly still better. At least it fits in a parking
space. So yeah, I think a bit more of a usable car than a Ram in terms of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was pretty cool to see that. And then he drove off and proceeded to sound like trash because it didn't sound very good. So we did the drive, you know, we all had a beer and just had a general chat about, you know, about cars.
Mainly about cars, funnily enough, Matthew. Yeah,
I know, you don't say.
We weren't talking about tax reform or, you know, climate change.
Or the crisis in Gaza or anything. Like,
no, we're just really coming about, off on that.
Yeah, we're mainly talking about W201s and...
talking about China, interesting. Which you can talk about next episode, I guess.
Yeah. What was that, Ed?
Yeah, one of Chad's just bought a 201, so that took up a little bit of airtime, you know, picking apart. What that car is.
Yeah, well, he's really excited for that car. He wants to paint it and get it all ready to drive. But we'll talk to him when he gets back on the show next week. But yeah, that was a good day all in all, and yeah, we were finished up by about 2:30, and you know, home by 3:30, and yeah, it was a nice
early dinner, early to bed.
I know it was great. It was a really cracker day. So I just wanted to thank you guys for coming on the trip, and we'll have to do it again.
Plenty more. Let's do plenty more.
Yeah, absolutely. Moving on to tonight's main topic, though, is affinities. Now, we all have affinities, and despite what people say, oh, I don't have affinities to cars, I'll just buy anything. Everyone's got an affinity to something. And, you know, in particular, like, for example, you, Alan, you had an affinity for Subaru, and you had a WRX, and then you bought an WRX STI. And you kept that, you know, that affinity strong. But also, yeah, people get affinities for cars that they've had for a very long time or in the family. And Edward, you've had the Mini's been in your family since new, I believe, right? The Mini you currently
have. It has, yes. So 1966, my grandmother bought that car, and it was a demo model, so it wasn't brand spanking. It had done 600 miles when she got it. It was about a month old, so it had done. It was registered in mid-October 66, and she picked it up mid-November 66. So 4 weeks on the road, it had done 600 miles, which is, 1,000 Ks in today's metric money. So someone drove it, you know, a reasonable amount that first month. I don't know if it was... if it was someone, you know, the dealer principal, or if it was on a test drive. I have like 58 test drives. Who knows?
Would you say it was executive driven?
Maybe it was executive driven. that information will never be known. But yeah, ironically, it was the only car she ever owned. You know, it was back from the era when you didn't just trade something in because there was a newer, flashier thing. It was sort of this. Well, I mean, I'm sure some people did, but certainly my grandparents' mentality was of that. Oh, well, it's not broken, that we paid good money for that, and you just sort of keep it and look after it, you know, that. But it sort of went for a lot of things, like things around the house, the car, the, you know, you didn't just move house because you wanted a bigger house sort of thing. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong with this one. You know, we just make do. So it's that kind of mentality that I really resonate with that. I do like it, and I think that there was far less wastage back then because people were a little more, you know, well, I suppose they weren't doing it for environmental reasons necessarily, but inadvertently they were. So it was more expense. You know, things cost money, and, you know, you had to save up for it. And maybe it was just going through the wartime of, well, hang on, things are scarce and materials in the world are scarce, and you just recycle and you kind of reuse and you make do. So, yes, that car's been around for a long time. And the scariest part of that is that I have now had that longer than my grandmother had it.
Oh, well.
Which it makes me feel really old, getting back to the little age topic from the start.
You're 21.
She had that from 66 till about 94. I took that over, 1994. What's that? What's 1966, 1994? That's 20-something years. 28 years she had that. And what's 1994 to now? Is that 28 years?
30 years now.
Yeah, so it's 30. So I've had it longer than she had it. And as a kid growing up with that car, I mean, I first rode in that car when I was probably 18 months old. And then I knew it my whole life, obviously. And it just seemed like an eternity that she had that car. And now that I've had it longer, I think, my God, what I feel guilty for not using it enough, probably.
How did you end up with that? Like, how did you end up with that?
It was just I'm one of three kids, you know, the oldest of three, and obviously I was just the car nut, and my only other cousin on the other side of the family, you know, was not interested in cars, and she was quite a bit younger than me, so. Because I always washed it and I obsessed about it and I talked about it and, you know, I used to love riding in it, and it was just sort of always a thing that well, you know, that'll probably go to Ed, you know, because he's just, you know, I just love that car. There was, you know, I think let's pretend for a second she didn't have that. I think, would I have gravitated towards Minis anyway? Yes. I can categorically say I would, because I like the compactness of them. I like the handling of them. I thought they were great, cute looking cars, but they had this sort of undertone of performance because they went around corners well, because being the front drive and very chuckable and all those good Mini qualities. So I think I would have gravitated towards Minis, but I really gravitated towards Minis because of that car. So the affinity started very, very young. Anyway, and it was, I remember at some point my parents and my grandmother were talking about her will and, you know, da-da-da, and I think it was the solicitor, you know, something came up about the car. And the solicitor said to my grandmother, if you don't specify it, it'll just go into the estate and sort of goes into general, whoever the executor is or whatever. So fortunately for me, they decided to specify it. And they said, you know, the car goes to Edward. Right. So now I got it before my grandmother passed away. You know, I got it in 1994 because she stopped driving by then. And so I took it over and had it painted. And, you know, did a few little repairs to it and things, but it's pretty much like it was. You know, I really haven't touched it or done anything silly to it. I just painted it. So my grandmother saw it painted, you know, she saw it when I had it done and was like, oh, it looks beautiful. Oh my God. You know, so she got to see that, which I'm glad about. And yeah, it's just been maintained and driven ever since. So there's a long history with that car. So yeah, that started a good affinity.
So an affinity with British Leyland, like with the...
Yeah, affinity with British cars in general, I think. So my first car wasn't that. My first car, when I was 14 in year 8, I bought a Morris Minor with a friend of mine. So I was always about British cars when I was young, because to me they had character. You know, they had nice smiley faces and cute little headlights, and I liked the old vinyl and the wood grain and the Jags, and, you know, I was... You know, growing up in the 80s, I sort of was, the British cars were where my eyes always went. I did like Mercs, you know, and German cars as well, of course, Porsches and Mercs and things I liked, but the British cars were quite cheap, you know, relatively. So I think it was their car. And I remember my uncle telling me, you know, when I was 14 or 15, wanting to buy the first car to tinker with. He said, get a Japanese car. The bolts will come off when you want them to. Just go Japanese. And I just wasn't interested in Japanese. I thought they were boring. And I thought they were sort of a bit ugly, a lot of them. They didn't excite me in the way that a cool old British car did. Now, move on. And my affinity for Japanese cars has obviously grown a lot stronger. And it's far more nostalgic now, because those cars when I was a kid that were everywhere are now quite collectible. So things like Gen 1 Civics or the funky little Honda City that I've got, I always liked them. It wasn't that I didn't like them, but that bond has grown stronger over the last decade or two. Definitely. Yeah.
And is that how you got into, like, for example, how you got into, like, you always wanted a Moke? Was it because it was an English, you know?
The Moke. I had a set of Weet-Bix cards, you know, I think it was, you know, with cars of the world sort of thing. And there was one that had a Mini on it, and there was one that had a Moke on it. And I used to just love staring at the Moke one. And it was a very easy leap to make from loving Minis to loving Mokes. Because it's like, well, hang on, here's a Mini with no roof. Here's a Mini that looks like a little army Jeep. Like, this is cool. So yeah, I always, always, always loved Minis and Mokes and Morris Minors and, you know, all that British stuff. MGs, I couldn't believe it when I first bought my MG, and I remember unclipping the soft top. This was an MG Midget, so this is a late 60s, same as an Austin Healey Sprite. But, you know, you unclip the soft top and that feeling of watching the sky as the vomit fell back behind my head and just going, oh, my God, I have my very own convertible. That was, as a 20-year-old when I bought that, I thought that was pretty king shit.
Yeah,
other people probably just laughed at me, but I loved it. I loved it.
So would you say your affinity with cars is strongest towards English cars still, or would you say
No, I wouldn't say it is. I'd say I still have a love of English cars, but I'd say my affinity has changed far more into nostalgic Japanese.
Okay.
And into Well, there's a big wrench car affinity that I have too with my old Renaults, and German, you know, the Benzes. Like the bit, I have underlying the British cars are great and characterful, but they're often shit. You know, they break and they look. You know, I make no bones about that. I'm not one-eyed about it. The Benzes, you know, the golden era of Benzes from 70s and 80s, they always impressed me because of their build quality and their solidity. And they were a different machine to a British car completely. So they were often a bit staid or boring or conservative to some people, but once you've lived with one and you appreciate how they're screwed together, an 80s Benz or a 70s Benz is a special thing.
Absolutely.
So the practical part of my brain loves a Benz because you can put 400,000 K on it and it still shuts the door like new. You can't do that in a British car. So
I mean, to be fair, you can't do that in a new Benz either. So
exactly. That's why I say golden era of Benz. So these affinities, but as we've said before in this podcast, they all come from influences. You know, like I watched Hannibal Lecter the other night, that wonderful film, Silence of the Lambs, you know, and there's a scene, I don't know if you boys have seen that. It's a great classic film. If you haven't, you've got to see it. But there's a wonderful scene where he's talking to Jodie Foster and they're trying to catch this murderer. And Joe, you know, he says, "What does he do? What does he do, this man? And you seek," and Jodie Foster says, "Well, he murders women, sir." You know, and he's like, "No, that is incidental," and he digs deeper and deeper and deeper, and he says he covets. You know, that's his nature. He covets, and what is it to covet? You don't just dream up things to covet. He says, "Do you dream up things to covet?" No, you covet what you see every day. If you'd never seen a Mercedes Benz SLK and you loved SLKs, you don't dream up an SLK in your head. You have to see it in a magazine or in your friend's driveway or, you know, wherever, somewhere. It has to come from somewhere. And it's the same with these affinities. These affinities to me come from a neighbor having one, a parent having a certain car, seeing it in a magazine, watching it on Top Gear, blah, 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 blah. A teacher at school rocking up and going, "Wow." I mean, MX-5, classic example. My year 7 coordinator had a bright red, brand new Mazda MX-5. And me being the car kid, I was in his office every day talking cars because he loved cars. So I would talk about, you know, "Why did you sell your Peugeot 205 GDI? And what were you looking at the time?" And then he got this MX-5 and I was just like, "That is perfect. The shape, mechanical package, everything about it was just to me perfect." And I thought one day I got to have one of those. So these affinities, you know, we covet what we see.
So
if you grow up with a family of all Holdens, you're probably going to have a very big nostalgia towards
you're probably
that.
A bogan.
And you're probably a bogan.
So you, affinities with British cars for
British cars
for the reason of family and
yeah.
Yep.
Family, you know, yeah, probably that Mini kicked off the British car thing.
Yep. Maybe with German cars because of the solidity and the.
Yes, but our neighbor, the people who live, friends who live next door to my grandparents who had the Mini, they always had a Merc. And so I rode in these Mercs. I saw these Mercs. And again, they kept the same car for years and years and years. It wasn't like they chopped and changed, but I just. You know, from a young age was exposed to that, you know, and I think that started it. And then you learn, oh, they're actually great cars and da, 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 da. And I remember one day sort of mastering all the models because Mercedes-Benz, if you said, "Oh, tell me what Mercedes-Benz models are between 1960 and 1990, my God, like that's a confusing topic. Like a 230.4, a 230.6, a 230E, a 300D, an E280, an E220. What do these things mean? You know, it seems to have no rhyme or reason. But once you get your head around that, the whole sort of Mercedes puzzle makes sense. So, yeah, I had an affinity from being a little bit exposed to the odd Benz as a kid through these friends.
And the Japanese one came later because your appreciation.
Japanese one came later. Yeah, definitely came later. I guess Japanese
cars. MX-5 related? Like from the MX-5, like, you know, actually that's a really cool car. And from
yeah, I think that was probably a big part of it. And then, I have this practical undertone. So because they just work, you know, I like that about it. And there were some pretty cool Japanese cars like the Cities and the Civics. And, you know, I always liked Hondas. That was stylish and well-made. So I always had an affinity for Honda But I didn't own one early on. You know, that was later that that happened. And then you discover that whole world of, wow, they're really reliable cars, and Honda owners are very loyal for a very good reason. Absolutely. So, yeah, there's an affinity for Japanese cars, definitely. And the French one, again, you know, why do I have two Renault 16s in my collection? Because our family friends had one, and I was just like, what is this thing? You know, it was so different to my parents' Ford and Nissan van. Like, they rock up in this burgundy Renault 16, and I'm like, it's got a column gear change. It's got a hatchback. What is this? I thought it just looked cool and wacky, and it was a strange world to me that was so intriguing as a kid. And so that's obviously followed me, you know, the affinity for that. But then, like anything, you go down the rabbit hole, you learn about them, you go, oh, they've got an amazing ride, and they won Wheels Car of the Year in 65, and they're one of the most versatile interiors of their time because you can fold the seats in a billion different ways. And, you know, when you sort of learn about this stuff, I never had an affinity for Italian cars. I didn't know anyone who had Italian cars. I know they rust a lot and can be notoriously unreliable, but can be very beautiful and amazing to drive. But I've never had an affinity for them. I know, and if I was given bucket loads of money, I wouldn't buy Italian, you know, probably for that reason. Whereas if you'd grown up in a family or your uncle had an Alfa, or, you know, you would have a much stronger bond with that, I think.
So do you guys think that, like, you know, families and people around you that have those cars build those affinities, or is it just kind of like what you kind of fall into, if that makes sense?
I think family definitely has a lot to do with it. Also, one of my favorite YouTubers always says geography is destiny.
Okay.
And basically where you are at certain points of your life definitely makes a massive impact. This is kind of a side note. I was just considering how lucky we are to kind of live in Australia, or more or less, you know, a Western country where kind of a lot of the cars that we would see in the media in the more attainable range, they're also, we can actually just buy them.
Mm.
Like, you know, having an STI, being a Greek kid that grew up with Gran Turismo and whatnot, being able to actually own one of those. I'm fortunate enough to live in one of the countries that sells them, and they're actually available for a reasonable price. Mm. We could be in Singapore or somewhere in, you know, East Asia and stuff that you're not going to get them unless you're really, you know, either insanely wealthy, or you're able to import them when they're used and kind of a little more decrepit. Mm. Like, there's always a way if you're really willing to. Like, there's like a WRX Club of Uganda, I think. Yeah. You know, so there's always a way, but it's harder. It's definitely where you are, where you kind of grow up, has a huge impact on it. And I think starting out for me, like in India, not a lot of people own cars, at least in the village life. My dad had a company car that came with a company driver. That was a different thing. Whereas when we moved to New Zealand, it was
Jap Central,
exactly. There wasn't really a manufacturing market. Anything that was probably coming from Australia. So the government's more than happy for people to just import stuff. And where else to import stuff from? Then the other, you know, right-hand driving stuff is Japan. So we got, you know, like Skylines and Civics and everything else. So the earlier cars we had the Civic wagons, shuttle wagon, as my dad called it. And then my uncle had like a red Civic sedan. It was like the Civic and the Civic. He's like, what do you want? Pick your poison.
You've got your choice for Civic or another Civic.
Civic, yeah, that's it.
What a great choice. That's a very solid choice either way. You can't go wrong.
You can't go wrong. And, you know, moving to Australia, Dad, the first thing he bought, he was in Sydney at the time, was a Daihatsu Terios. Mm-hmm. That was a great Sydney car. I didn't pan out as well once he was in the open streets of Melbourne. But you've seen a city car, and, you know, it was a great time. And just owing on to that kind of Japanese mindset of reliability, that's what we had during our foundational time of owning cars. It became, well, if you want something reliable, you want something cheap, get Japanese. Mm-hmm. So the next car was like an 80s Corolla, I think.
You guys had that for years.
Yeah. And when we moved to Canada, we obviously sold that car, came back from Canada, and immediately bought a Mazda 323. So, you know, Japanese again, that got in an accident, went and bought a Suzuki. And what was that? After that, Dad would have bought the Camry, the 1990 Camry. And it was my foray into like becoming a young man on his red peas who wanted to prove a point of sorts. It was, I want something rear-wheel drive, you know, and I want to be able to do some burnouts, which I never really did.
Some driftings.
And that's why I went for the Falcon. My idea was actually to get a Supra. An NA Supra was my ideal car as a P-plater car. It would have been the dumbest idea, but it was what I wanted. But, you know, I had some sensible individuals in my family who stood against it.
You get the Falcon.
Yeah. So I got the next closer. I'm like, I need an attainable rear wheel drive. And that was where the Falcon came in. And that's the only Australian kind of car we've owned. And that was because I wanted to experiment. I wanted to break away from the mold. You know, I was a rebellious teenager and all that jazz. But so much of it was just, you need a car, get a Japanese car. Anyone that would, you know, move from overseas that we knew, it was get something Japanese. That's just kind of been, again, like starting off with that geography being our destiny, is just that's what we found and that's what we loved. And now it's just, if I consider a car, it's like, yeah, I want something Japanese. Like, I now thought of maybe getting something a little more luxurious. And one of the things that are strongly in my mind is a Toyota Century.
Oh, sweet.
Just, you know, there are definitely, given that a good one will probably cost me close to 40, I could definitely get something European in a similar age bracket and similar use, you know, kilometer bracket.
Not with the V12.
Not with a V12, but with a V8, definitely. And that's the thing. It's like, why am I gravitating towards the Japanese? It's just probably because I've got that affinity. It's just kind of the thing.
How did you end up with the Subarus? So because you were after an S15. I remember that.
Yes.
And then you went to, because I remember having this chat with you once at Julian's place. You're like, oh, I'm going to buy an S15. And then you rock up with the WRX. So I was like, wait, what? That's a bit of a...
So, again, Gran Turismo early days. One of the cars I do remember fondly was the GC8 WRX. Mm-hmm. And that was the cool thing. And then growing up in early 2000 in Australia, I remember a WRX cop car pulling up somebody. And that was, again, just that cool influence. Sometimes it just takes one moment. Then my uncle having the Legacy in New Zealand, because it was a Jap import with the twin turbo. That definitely had an influence. But the S15, I think it could have gone either way. There's probably an insurance issue with the S15. I definitely wasn't 35 at the time. And, you know, still not at 35. So, you know, having the S15 now, which would be worth a decent chunk, but without any insurance, it would be a tough ask. And the WRX, like, it was a blob eye. At first, I was looking at bug eyes because they're a bit cheaper. The blob eye was the one that seemed to fit the price. And importantly, I think, because, you know, being the brown man in the brown family, it's a family commitment as well. My dad saw the photo of the car. He's like, this is actually nice. Let's go check it out.
All right, okay.
And that's what caused it. We literally drove to the place, checked out the car and bought it on the day. It's just, yeah, again, it's got to, I guess, having the stars align in a way as well. Like, it was a family decision. My mum wasn't too happy about it, but she's never too happy about buying a car. But, you know, it was getting a parent's approval as well. And the Subaru fit the bill for that. And it's been so well that, you know, my brother-in-law appreciates it. He's using it, and I've got the STI. Like, it's something that's rooted with us. Like, in the future, if we do consider a car for my mum, it might be one of the Subarus. Like, something that she can enjoyably drive. You've got the reliability, you've got all-wheel drive, even though we're not the toughest conditions in this country. But it's something nice to have. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Grippy in the wet.
Yeah. The only European thing I can say we've had is the truck, the man, the MAN. Yeah.
Where were MAN from? Are they German or Scandinavian or something?
I thought they were German.
Great question. I thought they were German too.
Yes. They're under one of those conglomerates, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
We'll get back to you on that.
What about your affinities, Matthew? I mean, obviously you've got the Laser, which came from sort of your first car, but you've also got a Ford. You've got a bit of an Australian affinity.
Yeah, I do, but I've always had a small car affinity, and I think that was because, well, both my mum's brothers are mechanics. Two of the three are, and two of them, I believe, one of them worked for Ford, and you know, was always like, oh, you know, Ford's a good car, but Uncle Mark, he was always into small performance, so he had a Mark II Escort two-liter Pinto with a hot cam and an exhaust and jelly beans on it, and it was tough, and he still reckons it's the best car he ever had, and he's like, I
should. Did you see that as a kid, that car, a lot? Like, did you know of it, obviously, and liked it?
I knew of it, and I saw photos of it, but I never got to see it in particular because he sold it for a V8 Ford, but which he regretted doing. But he was always like, oh, I used to give the big V8 boys a run for their money. I always used to beat him because it was a quicker car. It weighed nothing. It handled better, and it went harder. And I was like, oh, that's so cool. He's like, I'd have the thing sitting on 8,000 RPM all day, every day, and I'd just be just loving it. And this is a car from like, you know, from the 70s, you know, like, this is not exactly, it wasn't a new car back then. And then that got me into lasers because I was like, oh, well, if it's a small four, what do they got? They got lasers. And I really liked the Capris because I wanted a kid that they were new. XR2s and Capri Sprints and Club Sport Capris and all that. So I was actually a bit of a fan of those, which is a bit of a story that not a lot of people know. But I was a big fan of those. I was like turbo, and I didn't know what turbo meant. It was like a 4 or 5 year old, but I was like, oh, that's must be better. So yeah, I was always into like small Fords, and mum ended up getting she got a KE laser, and I thought that was so cool. And but we also had like a big Ford, so we had like an XF Fairmont, which was great. And yeah, it got stolen and I was devastated. But we also had Geminis, like that had a Gemini, and I came home from the hospital in Gemini. I thought the Gemini was so cool. It was green, and probably one of the reasons why I love green, it's my favorite color, was because of that car. And that's given me an affinity for green things, you know. So for example, Yoshi the character, I always play him because he's green. And you know, even my Fiesta I bought, which was green. But I think the real laser affinity came from just how reliable and dependable they were, and fun to drive. And they had TX3s, and when I learned about TX3 turbos, and then I learned about TX3 turbo four-wheel drives, I was like, oh, this is the coolest car ever. Adjustable height suspension and all that stuff. So it excited me. We never had a TX3 turbo or anything, but you know, I used to draw the mum's laser with a TX3 body kit, and I thought it was cool, but. Then I got my first laser, and then I got my SR2, which I still have, and I've had that for 14 years this year now. So it's been, you know, I've always liked small cars because they're easy. They're fun to drive. They're easy to park. And I guess that's kind of what brought my affinity on with small cars, but also Japanese cars, because my laser it's built in Japan. As you guys know, it's a Mazda 323. So got me into Mazdas, and then I got into RX-7s, and I got into all sorts of stuff like that I was really interested in, and I'll never be able to afford, but kind of liked really Japanese cars and Camrys and stuff, which people are like, well, how do you like a Camry? Well, back when I was in high school, the V6 Camry, which the family's car was, I used to like kicking the Falcons and Commodores at their time, which was quite fun. In Mexico, obviously, So I like that, but I also like the Ford, like the sedans, like Falcons and stuff, because you know, every Arab and their dad had one. You know, if it wasn't that, it was a Camry, but it wasn't that, it was a Mercedes. You know, that were the three cars you'd have a Falcon, a Camry, or if you made it, you had a Merc.
And there was also the occasional Magna rolling around.
Correct, Magna, yes.
There was a certain group of kids that would go home in a light blue Magna.
I don't know what you're talking about. I liked the Falcons because, you know, they were that, and I grew up with them. But what really got me into it, like really into them, was when they brought out the XS6 Turbo. And because it was like Japanese turbocharged performance in a big, Falcon sized car. And I was like, oh, you know, I can be friends with both the Aussie car guys and the Japanese car guys, cause I'm in between now. So, that got my affinity with the Typhoon, and still own that. And, but yeah, like I always liked minis as a kid, and seeing the Italian job, you know, like the original one was like, oh, that's such a cool car, I can fit it anywhere. and I said to myself, I'm going to get a small car. And, you know, that's why I had the laser. And now I've got an N360 Scamp and a Fiesta ST, because I really like how small and
they're almost a mini, aren't they? They're very mini-esque.
They are very mini-esque, but they're smaller than mini, which is quite cool.
Yeah.
And then the last one, Japanese cars, I was obsessed with the Toyota MR2 because I just think it's one of the coolest looking cars ever made. It's just the angles, and it's been designed with a ruler. It's just, for me, it was just, you know, peak kind of, you know, interesting sports car. And And I like, and Initial D, 4AGE engines and stuff. So that kind of got me into it. So yeah, I grew affinities because I grew up with, you know, with people driving certain cars, but also I grew a respect for those cars. And I grew a respect for, you're right, Mercedes from the 80s, because, you know, every, you know, Arab at church had one. and basically that was, that's like a Mercedes-Benz number one, the best car in the world. And yeah, like, you know, loved 124s. I thought they were just a classy looking car. Like, if you had a 124, you were somebody. And mom's old boss used to have a C124, and she used to drive it home sometimes, and the seatbelt would come out. I was like, oh my God, that's the coolest
thing. Yeah.
So it was a 300E coupe, and it was a gold one with tan interior, and I don't know what the exact code was for that, but that was cool. So that kind of really grew my affinity with Mercs. So that's kind of how I got to where I am. Like, I obviously, Gran Turismo, like you were saying, Ellen, like, I got to play with all different cars, like, you know, all the different makes and models, and got to explore. And I'm like, oh, that's so cool, and this is awesome. That's why, you know, I like Subarus because of that, you know. And so yeah, it's funny how, like, you get kind of put in with a certain group because you drive a certain car, but that's not necessarily the case when there's so many influences around you. And I think influences, can help change a person, can help change a person's, you know, perception on anything really, really strongly. So yeah, it's interesting to see that the main big influence that we all had of, you know, family choices, you know, with cars that they've owned. Alan, with your parents, and Edward, you know, with your family, you did that. Having a Merc, and your mum, your grandmother having the Mini, you know. So yeah, it's actually a really, really cool way of thinking of, like,
my dad never had a Merc back in the day. That was later.
That was later, okay.
Because, you know, our neighbours had the Merc, or my grandmother's neighbour had the Merc. But no, it was only, Dad has had a couple of Mercs later on, but that's purely my influence, you know. So it's like he would never have gone out and bought one himself. You know, it was sort of like me nagging, like, get this, these are amazing, da da da. Like, I went into full sales mode pretty hard. You know, and yeah, I campaigned. I should run for American president, you know, like, I campaigned hard.
I must say, that's pretty slimy going salesman on your own family. Once a car salesman, always a car salesman.
I wanted a Merc bad for so many years. And yeah, because I couldn't buy one, I was a kid. But the next best thing, well, we'll get my parents to buy one. You know, how do I achieve that? Anyway,
so you went Gordon Farkas on your family, and you're like,
oh yeah, totally. I was, you know, and not just Merc. There are numerous cars over the years that I thought that would be a good idea, and so I would, yeah, me being the car guy, I would campaign very hard for certain things to happen in the car world. Yeah, didn't often get my way,
but
anyway, but there were a couple of Benzes through the years. Yes,
yeah. I'm surprised you didn't become a Ford person, because your dad and mom had plenty of Fords. They had Zephyrs. They
Dad had three Fords I can think of. One, two, three. Yeah. Yeah, he was sort of a Ford guy. And, I mean, I have a nostalgia towards those cars. Like, if I saw one of those exactly the same at a car show, I'd be keen to look at it. But I don't want to own it. And I didn't think the build quality was amazing. And yeah, it didn't get its hooks into me as much as the cutesy Mini did, or other stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think two models, you know, like, these influences can come from real life cars, but like you say, it can come from a movie or a Gran Turismo choice, or someone gives you a model car of something as a kid and you play with it and you get to know all its lines. And then, of course, the big one's enticing after that. So, you know, it can come from any of those sources too.
I remember one of my first Matchbox cars was a BMW 850i.
You've never owned one of those yet.
I've spoken about them a few times in the show. I've always loved the look of those. I think they're a timeless car. I think they're a beautiful car, actually, to be fair. But I never owned one because they're terrifying. You know, I remember the doors used to open, and then when I saw one in person and sat in one, and my panel beater's got two of them, and he's had his for years, and he's got both 850s. And I'm like, oh, just everything's so nice, and hearing it start sounds like a bloody jet plane turning on, and You know, I was like, this is such a cool car. And he's like, Matt, do me a favor, don't ever buy one. because it's just, they're a mechanical nightmare. But I every time I see one, I've kind of fallen in love with them again. I'm like, oh, I'd love to own one, but I wouldn't love to own one because I know I'd be broke and have to sell everything to keep it.
Yeah.
So yeah, like there's also I think what's called dream affinities. You know, like I've got an affinity with that car specifically, not BMW, but that car in particular. You know, and I'd love to have it to drive one and to own one, but. You know, again, it's a dream affinity because I grew up with you're right, like the little toy, the Matchbox, and then they'll see ever since seeing one, I was like, oh, that's, you know, that's well, yeah, it's interesting to see how you guys get your affinities. Gentlemen, is it time for the quiz?
I'm talking about infinities,
I'm gonna vote to veto the quiz for tonight because only two competitors.
Okay, cool.
Fair. Hang on a minute.
No, I don't think it's gonna be fair. I need a couple other people to take
Why not, Alan? Why not?
I just don't think it'll be fair, Ed. I'm just saying.
According to the question, I think you'd do very well with that one.
I don't know. I feel like Ed says Ed first, then thinks about the question. You know what? I'm backing down from a challenge. This is my Marty McFly moment.
Of course.
Did you say chicken? No one calls me chicken.
Marty McFly. Nobody calls me chicken.
All right, Alan, let's go.
We are doing the quiz.
We are doing the quiz. So this is the car talk car quiz. 10 questions plus some bonus questions. Question one. Who makes the new BZ4X?
Ed. Subaru?
Incorrect. BZ4X.
No, I hesitate.
MG.
MG is incorrect. It's Toyota.
What?
Oh.
Bonus question. Why is this car important to Toyota?
Ed. First all electric car.
It is the first all electric car. Well done.
Damn it.
I thought you would have got that one because it's been all over the news. all right. Question two. Which extremely rare Aussie V8 coupe has been recently up for sale?
Alum. A Monaro.
Incorrect.
Is it a Falcon?
Incorrect. It's a Force Leyland P76.
Oh, okay.
Question three. What other Aussie car brand had the word Force in their models?
Oh.
Another Aussie car brand. Could be an American company, but Aussie.
Alum. Some kind of Valiant.
Incorrect.
Is it a Ford?
I'll give you a 0.5, Edward. It's Ford Performance Vehicles.
Four-six or 4.8 or whatever.
Yeah, that's the bonus. That's the bonus point. Okay. But I'll give you the
what?
Yeah, the bonus question was, what are they, the 4.6 and 4.8? Question four. What brand's new ute has been teased this week?
Elm. It's Kia.
Kia is correct, yes, with their Tasman ute, which is apparently the name of it, but we'll see if it actually...
Oh, wow.
Score check, 2.5 Ed, Elm 1, plenty of time to go. Question five. 28 years ago, two Formula One drivers had their cars stolen during a race when they were racing. What brand of cars were they? These are the Formula One drivers.
Like their private cars.
Yeah, they actually owned their actual private cars.
I suppose it's a good indication that they weren't using it at the time, isn't it, if they're on the TV racing?
Alan. They're Renault drivers.
Incorrect.
Were the cars Ferraris?
They were Ferraris.
No, you don't get to... Okay, never
mind. They were Ferraris. They actually found one of them, I think, yesterday or the day before, 28 years later, in someone's
hidden. Wow.
Yeah. Gerhard Berger's Ferrari. Question six, staying with Ferrari. What new and current car on sale have they purchased and are testing at Maranello? It's not the car that you think it might be. Put it that way.
Can I repeat that?
So, for staying with Ferrari... What new and current car have they purchased for a different car company's car and are testing it at Maranello? It's not a hyper or supercar as you would expect.
They've purchased a BMW.
A BMW is incorrect, Edward.
Okay.
Think about what's extremely fast and extremely, extremely ridiculous.
A Tesla.
Yeah. You're half right.
Tesla Model S.
That's gets you
played.
Absolutely correct. Yeah, they're one of those and are testing one of those. I don't know why Ferrari would want to do that, but sure. They want to say, how is this car accelerating so quick?
Because it's electrics.
Because electrics work, which is something that the Italians still haven't mastered. Question seven. In what year did Rover leave Australia?
Ed. 1994?
Incorrect.
1988.
1988 is incorrect. 2005, they had the Rover
74. Yeah, later. Yeah, I thought that. Yeah. Later.
All right. Question eight. How many series of the Holden Commodore came with factory turbocharged engines?
Ed. One.
Incorrect.
What did Ed say?
One.
Factory turbocharged engines.
So you're probably thinking of the VL turbo.
That's what I was thinking.
Alum. Two.
Two is absolutely correct, Alum. The
what was the other one?
They weren't Commodores anymore, but they like to think.
They were the later ZB insignia.
Oh, they had turbos in those. Yes. Damn.
All right, score check. Alum, 3. Ed,
3.5.
Oh, I told you to get some points here, mate. I told you to get some points. Question 9. Lexus made the LFA, as we all know and love, but they only made a certain amount of Spiders, which is the convertible version. How many did they make closest to and get the chocolates?
How many LFAs were there all up?
About 500.
Okay. Alan, I'll go with 87.
87, says Alan.
That's too many.
So funny. I was going to say 80.
Ooh, 80. So were you happy to stay with 87?
Yeah, that's fine.
They made two.
So I'm the closest.
It is surprisingly
the closest. That is bullshit. But
because we're so far off, I'll give you 0.5, Ed. How did that sound?
We didn't put one in. Hang on. I'm closest too. You said closest too.
All right. I'll give you the one. There we go.
I change the rules now, LFA boy.
Question number 10. How many models are currently on sale in Honda's lineup?
Ed. 4.
Is incorrect.
So you've got Civic Type R, the regular Civic.
Might be.
We've got the HRV, I think. We've got probably a CRV. Probably something else. I'm going to say 5. Is it 6?
It is 6.
Yeah. No, you can't change it now.
It is 6. You were so close. So they have got the Civic Type R, the ZRV, the HRV, the CRV, and the Accord.
Still the Accord.
Still the Accord, yeah. So there is.
So you treat Civic Type R and Civic as two different models.
They classify it on their website as two separate models.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
Realistically, they are when you look at them. Like,
yeah. Pretty. They're completely different cars for the most part. Score check. Alan, you're not disgraced. You did very well, my friend. Alan on 3, and tonight's winner, Edward on 4.5. Well done.
Ooh, by the skin of my teeth.
Teepy teeth, teeths. Gentlemen, I think that's a podcast.
Yes, it is.
Thank you, boys.
Thank you for that lovely chat. Edward Bunting, you do a podcast.
Yes. I, myself, and David Prince do a podcast. It's called Auto Retro, and we talk to guests about the cars of their lives. Maddie J has been a guest. Alan has not yet been a guest, but may well in the future be. So
I think I need to get a more interesting car life.
And, you've got a great car life.
I don't know. I feel it's got to be more interesting, and then I'll eventually be honored to be on.
Right, I'll give you 12 months, Alan. yes, you can listen on Spotify or watch us doing our thing on YouTube, even Auto Retro Podcast.
Lovely. Alan, our boy Rizzy Ross.
If you are interested in the electric car space, which is pretty hot, even Ferrari's getting on that, hit up our boys Rizzy Ross at carloop.com.au. You can also find him on facebook.com/carloopau. He also lets you know the best price for new cars.
Absolutely. Hit up our boy there. Like and share our Facebook page, Car Talk TRQU. Manny J, if you missed any of our previous episodes, they're all up on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasting out. So I think it's a subscribe, rate, and review to us. There, we are also on
YouTube. So find us on Car Talk Podcast. And, you know, we are on the road to 1,000 subscribers this year, we're hoping. So be part of that journey with us and look forward to video content.
Absolutely. Check out our merch, go to our Teespring store, go to teespring.com, type in Car Talk Source. Thanks to the listeners who have been buying some merch recently. I've sold a few shirts and things, which is really cool.
Woohoo!
And shout out to our patrons and our Patreon. Go to patreon.com/cartalkpodcast and support the show there. Gentlemen, honor as always. We'll see you next time. Take it easy.
Catch you
there. Bye-bye.